Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Hype Bubbles Once Upon a Time podcast. This week we're here to discuss the Once Upon a Time episode as well as the Wonderland episode that aired on Thursday. I'm Jen and I'm joined by Karen, Laura, and Kristen. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
And just so you guys all know, Jess, who was on the show last year, had to step down because she's been super busy in the real world, and so she will not be joining us this year. Maybe we'll get her to come on for like guest spot one time. But we just wanted you all to know, because I know you guys all love Jess. We all love Jess.
We did. We miss Jess.
Break right now. So we wanted you guys to all know that. And we're going to get right into the discussion, because there is so much to discuss from these two episodes. We'll also put in a time code in the post so that you guys know when to jump ahead to, if you only want to listen to one of the two discussions, you'll have the choice and we'll put the time code in the post. And that way you can move ahead to whichever one you want to listen to. But, you know, listening to it all could be kind of fun. I'm just saying. All right. So let's get started with Once Upon a Time. So last night's episode of Once Upon a Time was kind of interesting. It brought a lot of points to the table for a 1 hour episode. What was your initial reaction, you guys?
I really liked it, actually. I thought that Tinkerbell was a really interesting character. And I liked sort of her change over the course of the episode, where we see her kind of all, not necessarily doe-eyed in the beginning, but she is very happy and very positive. And then by the end of the episode, she's sort of broken. And I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I think the reason I liked it the most, although I did enjoy Tinkerbell very much, it's we finally got Regina as a human being again. I was so tired of just really, I don't know, cranky Regina, I'm going to call it, for lack of a better word. I just liked seeing another dimension to Regina, because I felt like we made such progress down that road last year, and it was nice to see that she was still in there somewhere.
Yeah, I really liked this episode too. I mean, I'm a huge Tinkerbell fan, so I've been looking forward to her joining the show for a while. So I'm really excited to see where they take her character and what they do with her this season. It's going to be really cool.
I loved her introduction and kind of how she's a naughty fairy and doesn't quite listen to the blue fairy. Love it.
Yeah.
There was a lot of exciting stuff going on in the episode. I really enjoyed it. And it gives us a little more insight, as you said, to like Regina and her character, and to even the characters that are in the Enchanted Forest. We got to see them a little bit, and we get to see kind of what's going on with them, which was nice as well. Because I have a feeling they'll all fold into the story a little bit more later on. So let's get right into discussing what we saw last night. Or actually, do you guys have some favorite quotes from last night?
I do. I loved the one quote. It was between Peter Pan and Henry. And Peter Pan tosses Henry an apple. And he was like, I don't like apples. And Peter Pan's like, who doesn't like apples? And Henry just goes, it's a family thing. And I just started cracking up. It was so funny. And the delivery was just so great on that.
Yeah, that was definitely, that was like right in the beginning. I'm like, oh, Henry's got a really sweet line to open that puppy up. It was really good. I liked that one. I also liked, there was a couple. There was one from Regina where she was angry with Tinkerbell and trying to make her go away. And she's like, fly away, moth. Don't let the doors catch your wings on the way out. And then Tinkerbell had one in the beginning that was Snow White. That's her name. Even I think that's a bit precious. And mine's Tinkerbell.
Yeah,
that was kind of funny.
That cracks me up.
Just to kind of show off who Tinkerbell was. You know what I mean?
That was funny. I cracked up at the Tinkerbell one. I was like, yay, somebody's like, yeah. It was just great that somebody finally called out the names, you know, that they are a bit silly. So I really enjoyed that. The one that I also like too, I feel like this year I'm all into like the wordy me, you know, not wordy, but the touching kind of quotes. I don't know why I'm not into funny this year for some reason, but I'm into the touching ones. So when Neil said, when you love someone, you don't keep it in, you say it, that was my favorite. I don't know. I'm on this like touching kick. I'm not sure why. I'm sure I'll be cured of it at some point.
Yeah. I like the touching ones too. I mean, they're good fun, especially when, you know, you've got really great moments like that one. It was really, really cute. My favorite from this episode was when Rumple was in Fairy Tale World with Regina, and he walks in on her eating dinner and says, "Roast swan. That's amusing. You'll get that later."
Yeah, that
I died. It was so funny.
Oh, so great.
That
so
one
great.
Was fantastic. That one was really good. So let's get into this discussion of Tinkerbell and Regina, because this is Tinkerbell's past, is Regina. And Regina was ultimately her downfall. So what did you guys think of that connection and how that storyline played out?
That was awesome, because that was obviously over the summer at Comic-Con when they were talking about Tinkerbell has a surprising connection to somebody on the panel. The person with the surprising connection was obviously Regina. So that was... that's cool. I loved that just, you know, Tinkerbell was on the side of Regina. I mean, she got let down, but I just liked that in Regina's misery, like, there was still somebody rooting for her. And I really liked that. And granted, it didn't work out very well, but I just liked that somebody didn't give up hope on Regina. And I think that's, like, an important theme.
I thought it was really important that Regina's, like, happy ending didn't just end when her first love died. Like, she has a chance at another happy ending, and she didn't take it. Like, that seems really, like, significant to me, that she just, like, ran away from her shot at happiness, and now, you know, that's basically what she's saying, has been saying for two seasons now, is, like, you know, everyone else seems to get a happy ending and I never do. And, you know, she kind of walked away from hers.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite things about this show. For one, that, you know, you can have more than one true love. That means that, you know, you have these power couples like Snow White and Charming, and you know that they're going to be together forever and everything. But, you know, somebody like Regina, you think all hope is lost for her, and then you turn around and find out that it's not. And I love the redemptive quality in that. And it is really interesting to see her walk away, and, you know, hopefully she'll find him again. Oh boy, I just had a flashback to Charming and Snow White there for a second. But yeah, I hope that, you know, she kind of turns it around and is able to reconnect or something. I think she deserves that after all this time.
Okay, I think my favorite part about that was at the end when Tinkerbell went over to Regina and was like, "You never walked in. You never went back. Do you realize you didn't just ruin your happy ending? You ruined his happy ending as well." I thought that was so strong. And so just the idea that Regina was selfish for herself, to protect herself for whatever reason, because she wanted her anger. But in doing that, not only did she ruin it for her, she also ruined it for him.
Picking up on the idea of, you know, ruining his happy ending too, like, we realized with the whole tattoo of the lion, and she's obviously like Richard and the Lionheart, and at the end of the episode you realize that Robin Hood has the tattoo, so her true love, who it is this person of the second chance, is Robin Hood. And it's really nice because obviously she is going to be his second chance too, because obviously Marion was the love of his life. So I'm assuming he was drinking in the pub that night because he was despondent over Marion's death. That's what I'm assuming.
No, so, it can't have been that long ago, though, because the little boy is only 5.
Right, but I mean, the whole, like, time and, like, I mean, I just figured they've just messed up time sequences forever. So.
Well, because Regina's husband was still alive at the time. Do you know what I mean? So that's a huge messed up time sequence to be in the same place. I'm just saying.
Maybe. Interesting. I'm curious how they work it out. But the other thing about that sequence, too, that I did really like a whole lot is Regina saying that she was afraid, because I don't think we've ever heard of Regina being afraid of anything, and that what was motivating her was fear, and that I mean, how sad that if you she was afraid if she let go of her anger, she wouldn't have anything left. I was like, wow, that's pretty, like, really sad, really, really sad. And that the only thing that has ever changed that in her entire life is Henry. I mean, I thought, wow, that's, you know, yeah, here's what's been motivating Regina all the time. And I think it's really, really amazing.
I'm just, is anyone else like super surprised that it's Robin Hood? Like, did that come out of left field for anyone else?
Well, I recognized the back of his head, like in that scene, like I thought it was him, but I'm surprised they're going there.
Like, well, yeah, because I recognize. Well, here's the thing. I also heard like rumors like months ago that Robin Hood could be Regina's true love. And I was like, what? How are we gonna like mash that all up and make it happen? So, I mean, I think I'm more surprised that they're going there and how they're gonna like make that happen with who she is now and with who he is now. I mean, I think he could put her in her place, which would be fantastic to watch. But it's just such an odd little mashup.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I really do like the guy who's playing Robin Hood. So I'm, you know, very on board with him. And I like the Merry Men and all that. I just, part of me is still like, what the heck? We killed Marian. Like, you Robin Hood fans know what I'm talking about. The BBC killed Marian. Now, Once Upon a Time killed Marian. What is with this need in modern fairy tale retelling that we need to kill Marian? I don't understand why we are killing Marian, but at some point I will get over this. But yeah, it's going to be a sore point with Robin Hood fans. I know it is.
So I have a confession to make, because I actually remember hearing about like Robin Hood being Regina's next true love or whatever too, and I'd completely forgotten about it. And when we saw the back of the guy's head in the pub, I swear to God, I thought it was charming. And I was like, oh my God, they can't be doing this, because like, way to ruin Regina's life even more.
Oh my God, that's all sorts of wrong on so many levels.
I know, yeah. I know. So needless to say, I was really glad it didn't turn out to be charming.
That's so funny. Like, that just would have been ugly. But yeah, so I don't know. I guess we'll see how it plays out and when they actually do get to kind of connect and interact. Clearly, that's probably going to be part of the back half of the episodes, because I think now we're going to be totally focused on Neverland through the first half of the season, and Robin Hood is not in Neverland. So we'll have to see. Perhaps the shadow goes back and takes the little boy, and then Robin Hood has to turn up in Neverland.
Well, that's one the thing, knows. Too. Like, that's part of it, too. And I'm curious if people are going... I think people are going to love this or hate this, but the fact that Robin Hood has this little boy who's motherless, and what kind of... was the one saving factor of Regina was the redemptive love qualities she showed to Henry. And I'm just... I have a feeling people... it's either going to be a love or hate it thing, that they're going to think that Robin Hood having this little orphan, not orphaned, but, you know, motherless boy Roland is a little too, like, set or a little too pat for somebody to walk in, or they're going to be like, oh, that's great. So I have a feeling it's going to be a love-hate kind of thing. I don't think anybody's going to be in the middle on this Regina Robin Hood thing.
I mean, I think time will tell, and it'll have to be, we'll have to see what those interactions look like. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's going to have to be... the chemistry between them is going to have to work on screen for us to buy it.
Yeah,
so
agree.
It's we won't know until we actually see them together. I mean, that's and like I said, that's going to be a while.
It's true.
So now we have plenty of time to ruminate and build up steam about how we feel about it, even though we haven't seen it yet. It's true. Know what I mean?
Yeah, the little boy definitely did though bring on the adorable factor. I mean, he was very
so cute.
Cute.
Yeah. So cute.
yeah. Let's hope as he, you know, gets a little bigger, he continues to hold the adorable factor.
Let's see. So we get to see Peter Pan and Henry in the beginning, and then kind of throughout the episode. And Peter Pan definitely has a plan, and you're still not quite sure what exactly it is, but it is nefarious in all kinds of ways. It clearly has to do with magic, and that people don't believe in magic in his world. So he needs Henry to help people believe in magic, but he's not very clear on why he needs that. But he tests Henry in the beginning with the poison arrow, and he wants to shoot the apple of Felix. By the way, his name is Felix, everyone.
Woohoo! We have a name!
Our lost boy. And I'll have you guys know, I did, we were at New York City Comic Con this weekend, and I did roundtables with Ed Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, and I asked them, I said, does he have a name? Because we just refer to him as the main lost boy. And they're like, yeah, his name is Felix. I'm like, really? And they're like, didn't we put that out there? I'm like, I don't think so. He's like, oh, maybe it was on Twitter. But yeah, his name is Felix. I'm like, awesome. Now we can refer to him. And then last night's episode was his name, Felix.
I want to know if, like, you know, because I'm not sure, like, what episode they're up to in filming. I'm wondering if, like, they're now quickly rewriting. You need to refer to him as Felix.
Well,
somebody named him.
It was last night's episode, so I think it's funny that it, like, maybe they thought it had already aired, and that's why they thought we knew his name was Felix.
Right.
Because I'm like, no, I really just refer to him as the really creepy lost boy.
Yes.
Like, that's what I call him. And they're just like, oh, no, yeah, his name is Felix. I'm like, oh, thank you. It makes life so much easier.
Yeah. That or the Jamie Campbell Bauer lookalike. Yeah, at least we have a name now.
Yeah, so you know, Pan gives Henry a nightshade arrow and says, knock the apple off Felix's head. Well, Henry turns it on Pan and tries to shoot him. And Pan knows that this is going to happen. It's like it's exactly what he wants to happen. He wants Henry to break the rules. He wants Henry to become daring. And so Henry kind of played right into his hands. And the same thing later with the scroll that Peter Pan gives him, the scroll that he's had before his birth. And he did have the picture of Henry, and Henry at first won't look at it. And Pan makes the comment of, oh, you're just like your father, and kind of walks away. So then, of course, Henry goes and looks at the scroll. So we're kind of left with Pan playing mind games with Henry. Do you guys have any more insight, do you think, to what his plan is now?
I have no clue, but he is just, like seriously, what a psychopath. I mean, because he can be nice one minute, I mean, completely amoral. I mean, he doesn't seem to care about handing people arrows dripped in nightshade, and he's kind of callous about the Lost Boys playing with knives and losing a couple of fingers. Like, he just doesn't care, and he's able to turn on and off that charm and sincerity, and at the same time he is able to lead people. Like, God, what a psycho. What just a complete psycho. I mean, you know, cue the Talking Heads music in the background for Psycho Killer, but I mean, he's just crazy, crazy, crazy.
Yeah, I just don't know how to take him, and I need more. I need to know why. I need to know what he's doing and why. Like, it's kind of weird. So we shall see.
I wonder if, I mean, he very specifically talked about the fact that Henry is sort of the product of the really, you know, good side, where you have, like, Emma and Snow and Charming, and then, you know, the bad side with Bay and Rumpelstiltskin, the dark one. And I wonder if, like, you know, Henry could either be, like, really good and, you know, if he has power over magic or something, like, use that for good, or he could be really bad because he's sort of split like that. And I wonder if Peter Pan is trying to, like, bring him over to the dark side and possibly manipulate him into using his powers and abilities for something nefarious.
The only other thing I can think of, which is, like, because they're always, like, making plays on words and phrases and things. Like, they did the whole play about, like, belief and believing in Tinkerbell and all that. And Henry is the heart of the truest believer. Is he going to try to break Henry's heart in some sense? Like, maybe literally, figuratively, maybe it is something to do with that? I don't know.
Or he's Emma and Neil's heart.
Yeah, which is kind of, what I was thinking. It's more along the lines of what I was thinking.
Yeah, because he said Henry is the true product of the lightest and the darkest magic. There was a comment about that as well. Because he comes from Balefire and Emma. So he comes from the Charmings and from the Dark One.
Interesting.
So is he the heart of them both? And that is why Pan has taken him. Because then he can destroy both light and dark magic.
Maybe.
Pan also says that Henry is the savior. That Emma was the savior because she had Henry, or he implies that. But that Henry is the actual savior. Did you guys pick up on that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not surprising, though. I mean, especially considering what he did for Emma in Storybrooke. Like, I mean, she was the savior, but without him, she never would have gotten where she got. Like, she never would have actually done the things she's done and actually saved Storybrooke without Henry.
She never would have believed.
Exactly. Yeah. So I can see it. I can see that Henry is ultimately the one who's going to, you know, save the day for them here and is going to, you know, ultimately be the thing that they need to fix everything.
Yeah. So we have a lot of different, like, plays on words between the heart of the truest believer and what that actually means, and then who the actual savior is and in what capacity, and then a lot of stuff about belief. Do you know what I mean? They did the whole Tinkerbell thing, like Laura pointed out, and then we have this Henry thing as well. So I think it's really interesting that those are the kind of the concepts that we're playing on, as well as the idea of being an orphan.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of manipulating going on here, though. I mean, not that I dislike the idea that Henry is the true savior, because I think that's a really sort of novel concept. But I don't like the idea of Emma sort of being knocked off her pedestal in that, you know, she's no longer the savior, she's just the mother of the savior. Because I always really liked Emma and the role that she played in not believing and then believing and sort of saving everybody. And so I don't know. I mean, I have a feeling that Pan, like you were saying, like everything in this episode, and I think for a while here, because they are in Neverland, is built off of belief. And I think if he can make Emma believe that she isn't a savior, even if she isn't, you know, the savior, and make Henry believe that he is the savior, things can go according to his plan. So I just sort of wonder, like, how much Pan is actually saying the truth and how much it's manipulating that belief, which could sort of be like a self-fulfilling prophecy to make it true, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes sense, because that's Pan's game. Pan is huge at mind games. So I think that a lot of it you have to read into it one way or another, and that's going to depend on what Henry does. What'll be interesting to see is now that Neil has found himself in Pan's place, what will happen with Henry and Neil? Because clearly Neil made the effort. He found a way to Neverland really early. I was not expecting Neil to get to Neverland this early, to be honest.
Me neither.
So the fact that he is, you know, made it to Neverland, he used the shadow, and he got there. And then, of course, who do we see? We see Felix waiting for him.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really funny. Eating an apple, of all things.
Yeah, was he?
Yeah, he was. Right. So Felix is like, oh, Balefire, Pan is happy to have you back.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I think, will Peter Pan put Balefire in and Henry together? Probably not, because that would defeat all of his purposes, wouldn't it?
You know what? I'm curious, because it's, I mean, they make such a big thing about putting out different forces of evil, whether it's Rumpel or Regina or Regina's mother. And now we're, you know, Hook, and now we're up to Pan. I'm wondering if we or they will go down the road of what is the salvation of Pan, because everybody is making him out to be like, you know, oh, you thought Regina's mother was evil. Oh, you thought Rumpel was evil. You know, this is the evil of evils. I'm wondering if we ever get to the point of, is there some sort of salvation for Peter Pan, or do we get into who are Pan's parents? You know, not something really explored in canon. And is there a savior to Pan? I mean, kind of, you know, to a degree, it's sort of Wendy and Wendy's descendants, according to canon. But I'm curious if they're going to go down that route at all.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, yeah, we are supposed to get the Darlings coming up here, aren't we?
Yeah, because, I mean, we did have them last year, and I thought they were coming back again. So I'm curious if they're going to work that in somehow. And
Yeah.
yeah, and obviously, you know, Neil Balefire has some sort of connection in that regard. So, yeah, that would be interesting.
That could become incredibly complicated if Wendy returns and if she somehow, if she made it off to a land to try and search for Balefire. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a whole bunch of complications in there.
Yeah, work those love quadrangles, baby. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I love this pan and I can't wait to see how it unfolds more and more as we move through the rest of these episodes, because I love the way they're playing pan. I know I saw a lot of comments on the post from the recap from Comic-Con that you guys are really unhappy about the way Pan is going, but let's hope that there's some sort of redemption for Pan, because I really enjoy what they're doing with them. I think it's different and really interesting, so we'll see
And
how it
yet,
plays out.
at the same time, I don't think it's a major departure from how he has been portrayed in the past. Like, I mean, even in like the original book, like he's very self-centered and very like unaware of other people. Like he always kind of says what's on his mind, and everybody else just agrees with it because he's Pan. And he's not really evil in that book, but I can see a lot of that in this character, and that he's just turned to the dark side because everyone's taken him at his word and, you know, is agreeing with him, and so why not go there at this point? But I can see threads of the Peter Pan we all know and love in this guy. It's just here he has an agenda that is not going the way we want it to go, so it's definitely more dark and evil.
Which I think is okay because, you know, these twists on the fairy tales make them more interesting. Because let's face it, we know how so many of these stories end. And the best thing about Once Upon a Time is that they take you beyond that, or they change it so you actually don't know what's going to happen. And I think that, you know, to keep it fresh and entertaining and interesting, to keep you interested in the show, they have to do things like this.
Very true. And I love it when things get changed up. I really do. It just, I don't know, it makes for exciting TV. So I guess we'll see how exciting it gets pretty soon. So let's talk about there's one more thing that comes up in this episode, and it's Mulan and her true love. I know. Here's the thing. I am all for, you know, whoever you want to love is your true love. That's awesome. What I'm having trouble with in this particular instance is we didn't see any of it. That was like out of left field. No one, there's been no indication that that's how she felt. Nothing. In fact, all indication was that she was in love with the prince. So.
It makes me really want to go back and rewatch those episodes because I think that, and I mean, I haven't watched them in a while, so this is sort of, you know, just off the top of my head, but we know that she was very invested in getting Philip back and very invested in, you know, staying with Aurora and all of that. And I wonder if, you know, we just kind of assumed that it was for Philip. And I wonder if we go back now and look at it, if we'll see a different light there. Because I do have a feeling that they didn't just kind of pull this out of nowhere. I mean, at least I would really hope that they've been sort of setting up for this for a while. And even if it was really subtle, which I think it was, you know, that if we go back, we can sort of interpret her actions in different ways. But aside from that, I'm really excited about this. I think it's so cool that they're going down this road, and it sucks majorly because I don't think anything is going to come out of it, because obviously Aurora and Philip are going to be together. They're having a baby, you know, and nothing's going to come out of it. But I really hope that Mulan maybe finds somebody else, and that could be a really, really cool thing to explore.
Yeah, it just felt a little forced. Like, I feel like they've been asked the question so many times that they felt like they had to do something, and the closest pairing that they could use at the moment that they could make, you know, make an effort at were Mulan and Aurora. So I don't know. It felt a little forced to me, and I hope it wasn't, and I hope it does have a purpose, and that it, you know, it's more than just to satisfy the question that's constantly being asked.
Yeah, definitely. I really don't want it to be forced either, but you know, I'm gonna go back and watch those episodes and see if there were hints to it or if it was really sort of out of left field.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of characters that they could do this with and people wouldn't be like outraged. But Mulan is a character that we don't really know very much about. I mean, we know the movie, we know what Disney did with it. But I mean, as far as the actual story goes, more of us are just going to kind of accept whatever happens because she's kind of an unknown fairy tale character. Like, she doesn't have a huge, you know, widely known story. So I'm okay with like that whole storyline. Like that's really interesting for to me. I'm just more interested now in where she's gonna go with it from here. Who's she gonna meet? You know, we learned, you know, that Regina has more than one true love. If Aurora was Mulan's first love, you know, maybe her true love is still out there.
This is true. It's all very possible. I wait and see. I reserve judgment to see how it plays out, I guess. Okay, so now we are going to switch gears now that we've discussed Once Upon a Time. And we're going to discuss Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, which premiered on Thursday. So there's so much to talk about with this one as well, I think. There's a lot coming at us and a lot of mashup and a whole lot of action. So what were your initial thoughts about Once Upon a Time? And we're just going to call it Wonderland to make everyone's life easier. So what were your initial thoughts about Wonderland?
I really liked it, actually. I thought that it was a cool departure from Once Upon a Time, where it did feel kind of different, but at the same time, like you could tell that a lot of this stuff is still related. And I think the concept is really cool. I like the idea that at least right now, it's not as complicated at Once Upon a Time because once can get. You know, it can give you a headache sometimes with all these storylines and how everyone's related and, you know, the different interactions and stuff. And this is a much more streamlined plot for now. And that's something that I think is really going to keep me going for a while because I don't know if I could handle another show as complicated as Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, I really like it. You know, as you said, it's a very specific, you know, plot driven, you know, goal and end kind of thing. I definitely like that. I also just I think you need to, when you do something like this, just get behind the hero or heroine. And I think instantaneously you have that with Alice, that you're just like, oh my gosh, like just at after that jail cell scene, I am so on board. I am so team Alice right now. I love it.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yeah, I think.
and I think the Knave is a really great balance to her. Now, you know, we've seen her a little bit here. We've seen her positivity and how she's, you know, determined to make this work. And I like him as her counterpoint. And I really think that interaction's going to work really well, especially depending on how long her and Cyrus are going to be separated. So I really, really love the show. I think it's going to be really great.
Yeah, I. From this, because we saw the first, like, what was it, 20 minutes at Comic-Con this summer. So we got to see Alice kick the crap out of everyone nice and early, which I was so excited about because a lot of times when we start off with a new series or something, sometimes the lead females can be a little more docile than expected and they build up to the kick-ass parts. So the fact that she came out of the box fighting and she's so determined, I love that about her. It's such a strong female character to have. And it's a character that I think younger girls can relate to because everyone knows Alice in Wonderland. So I'm really excited about that part of it. And I love the idea of the mashup. I think it's kind of a cool like twist to put those two stories together. So I'll be excited to see where they take it and how it kind of moves forward.
Yeah, I also loved in that sequence how the Knave just kind of sat back and let her do the job. Like in most instances, the guy would like jump in and take over again, and he just like saw her, was like, she can handle it, and puts his back against the wall and is just hanging out. Like, I love that. It's so great.
My favorite takedown was the shoes. I just love that she
Yes.
goes back for her shoes and just beams the dude with the boots. I was like, oh, go, Alice, go. I love that.
Yeah, it was great. And I do love the Knave. Like, everything about him. He's just so fantastic because he's a little unruly and he's not quite as posh. And you know that he's, you know, up to no good on occasion. And he has trouble dealing with that, finding that balance between good and bad and saving himself and saving Alice. Do you know what I mean? Like, the rabbit pulls him into it. He wants nothing to do with it. And Alice basically gets him to stay when he really is not wanting it, is kind of almost afraid to stay because he clearly got himself in trouble in Wonderland. And so I love his character. Yeah. And,
I really like him as an actor too. I saw him on Being Human, and not to spoil that series, but it has sort of a main cast that goes on for a couple of seasons, and then it introduces some new characters, and he was one of the new characters introduced, and frankly, he was one of the very few new characters that I genuinely liked and cared about, and I think that was all down to performance. He's very charismatic, he's very charming in an everyman sort of way when he's on screen, and I definitely felt like he brings that to Wonderland, so I'm really, really happy to have him on board. And if they ever do cross characters from Wonderland into the main Once Upon a Time, I would love him to be in that.
Yes, that would be amazing.
That would be super fun. And I think considering he was already in Storybrooke trying to make a life for himself, do you know what I mean? Like, he somehow ended up in Storybrooke, because that's where his story starts, before the rabbit comes to get him.
Right, so it's sort of, the possibility is there. They'll look open.
So it's kind of interesting that that's where he started. So it'll be curious to see why he was even there, how he got there, all of that good stuff.
It's just so funny. I just had this, you know, gosh, I think like Once Upon a Time in Wonderland just instantaneously make you think of shipping. And I just had this like, call me crazy. But I just suddenly had this thing of, wouldn't the Knave and Red be, like, fantastic together?
Aww, I like that idea.
not that I want Megan Ori not to have success with her new TV series, but, gosh, that would be cool. So, anyway, just putting it out there.
Okay. What do you guys think about the rabbit, voiced by John Lithgow, which I think is fantastic, but the rabbit is curious. He's up to no good. Yeah, at the same time, he clearly cares for Alice. So what is up with Mr. White Rabbit?
I mean, I really like the rabbit. I think John Lithgow could voice the telephone book and I'd be interested in it. I'm not sure what his game is, but yeah, I mean, I think we have to assume that he's on the side of good, because why break Alice out of jail? But I really love the rabbit.
But he's in cahoots with the Red Queen, and he's giving the Red Queen the information on Alice.
I'm just wondering if he has a bigger game. Maybe he wants something that, you know, he wants some part of Wonderland for himself, or, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's playing a bigger game for, like, the critters of Wonderland. I don't know. I feel like he's more nobody's minion. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
See, I kind of feel the opposite way to that, just because he always, like, he seems very passive and, like, he could be bullied fairly easily, and I think he's just afraid. And I hope that, you know, one of the redeeming qualities of him is that he's going to stand up to the queen at some point, and that could possibly have a bad outcome, but it would be really great for the character. But, you know, other than that, like, yeah, I think the rabbit's really interesting. And just to kind of talk about the CGI for a minute, like, he's not that bad. Like, it actually looks pretty good, and I like the way that they've sort of, like, styled him and everything.
Yeah, I do like that CGI. It does not bug me. I'm curious, like, what they're all looking at when, because, I mean, obviously they're not looking at him. I'm curious what
it is. It's a cardboard cutout rabbit.
Oh, okay.
They talked about it at the panel. Yeah, they actually have to interact with a cardboard cutout panel, rabbit. And when you see rabbit running through the field and they all kind of run after him, It's the cardboard cutout on a motorized skateboard.
That's great. That's great. I mean, because sometimes like they make them look at like tennis balls or things like that. So that's great that it's actually a cutout of a rabbit. That's cool.
Yeah, they have a cutout rabbit. See, my thing with rabbit is I think that the Red Queen has something on him because I don't think he would be so easily used or manipulated if she didn't. So I think that she must have something he needs or wants, or she has something on him that he has to do this. Because I do think he truly, truly cares for Alice and Cyrus. Like, I really think he does. Because clearly Alice had kidnapped him a while back and she was taking him home. You know what I mean? So there's an element that they have a connection there in the past and all this other stuff. I just don't know what the Red Queen could have on him.
Other than maybe he stole her wardrobe of Las Vegas showgirl outfits. I mean, is it just me or does she just look like a Las Vegas showgirl gone bad?
Well, her costumes are it's very much in the line of Regina and some of her crazy, you know, awesome costumes. But I mean, they are quite elaborate.
It's somewhere between Vegas showgirl and Rockette. It's like bring on the feathers and the sparkles.
Her original red dress that we saw at Comic-Con in the clip on the cliff is not the red dress she's wearing now.
No,
it was like mini skirt. Things hanging out all over the place. They changed that attire completely.
Yeah, she looked like a big red peacock with spangles and sparkles in the original one, yeah.
And there wasn't a lot to it.
No, there wasn't.
So, yes. So that kind of switched over. I don't know. And what about the Red Queen? Like, her motivations are so... I mean, clearly we've only had one episode. So we don't really know her motivation. Teaming up with Jafar, who kind of seems like a loose cannon psychopath, does not seem like a wise idea to me.
He really freaks me out, not gonna lie.
I mean, props to Naveen Andrews. He does Crazy Jafar really well.
Yeah, I love Naveen Andrews.
Yeah, and I just think she's in way over her head. I think he's got an agenda, and he's going to run his agenda all over her. I think the Red Queen is in some trouble herself. I don't think she's going to be able to control him the way she thinks she will.
I completely agree.
Yeah, and the only thing she's got going for her is that she knows Wonderland and knows where Alice could be with the Knave, because she's using the rabbit for it. Other than that, she doesn't have a lot going for her. Like, she's not nearly as powerful. She just, I don't know, she could be in a whole lot of trouble.
Yeah, and she seemed terrified when he was, like, about to attack her. I mean, which, you know, granted, makes sense because he had his hand around her throat. But I think she is realizing pretty quickly that, yeah, she's not going to be able to control him and that, you know, their situation there is very precarious.
Yes, indeed. And Jafar has the carpet. Does that mean there is no Aladdin? Or he hasn't been introduced yet to their world? What do you think?
I think we could get an Aladdin. I don't see why not.
Maybe Jafar stole it from Aladdin.
Well, for that matter, I do feel like, yeah, you could totally have an Aladdin. Yeah, so here's my thing. As much as we don't have Aladdin, who's to say we can't have Jasmine? Why can't Jasmine pop in, too?
Like, true, they do love their princesses.
Yeah.
More so than the princes.
Absolutely. So I have a feeling, you know, that could actually be coming too.
Yeah, and I like this mashup. I just want to see where they take it. And here's the best part about Wonderland is that this story arc will begin and end within the year. This will not be dragged out over time. So the Cyrus and Jafar and all of that, the Red Queen, all of those things will be resolved within this one season. So it's one big story arc, like watching a big miniseries. I kind of like that approach.
I love that.
Yeah.
The Brits do that all the time. Like, they, I think, are much better than we are at saying, yeah, this is the course of what it's going to run, and then it's done. And I think it's a great concept just to do something like that.
Yeah. So, but they also said that if, you know, people really like it, that they will do more with these characters. So I think that's really exciting because so far I really like these characters. And so I would hate to see them be done after 1 year. So I'm hoping that there is success and there is a way to tell their story, you know, in a different way. Maybe they are the ones that travel all the lands and explore all the different places. and introduce us to the rest of the world, you know, the worlds that are out there, because they have kind of that mobility and the ability.
Or next year they do, you know, Peter Pan, the early years, you know, the origins, yeah. The origin story before it all went wrong.
That these characters that we have now, we wouldn't lose. It would still be you know what I mean? So I don't know. They also said, and this is a little bit of maybe a spoiler, but if you guys read the New York Comic Con recap, there was talk that the Red Queen had to learn her magic from somewhere, right? And of course, who's the nastiest queen of all in Wonderland?
Right, so that makes sense, yeah.
The Queen of Hearts. So there is a lot of talk about getting Barbara Hershey to come back. Obviously, it would probably be like a flashback sequence of how she taught the Red Queen her tricks. But I think that would be super cool to see that.
Because I love her.
The Queen of Hearts would have like a daughter that she could train. Wouldn't that be interesting?
That would be wild. That would be wild.
It would also be, I'd be really curious to know if part of the Red Queen's mission was to get Cora back somehow. Like if she had that connection. And, you know, she knows Cora's dead, but if she can think of a way to magic her back, just throwing out a crackpot theory there.
That could definitely be interesting.
I don't know. We shall see. What do you guys think of Cyrus? Because he's like the only character we haven't discussed yet.
Boring. I really do not care about him at all. And I feel bad saying that because I know he's supposed to be kind of a big deal to Alice, at least. But so far, and I think that part of it is, like, we haven't really gotten a whole lot about him, but just the fact that, like, he's, you know, him and Alice are meant to be together and everything like this, like, I don't care. You know, I care a lot more about the Knave because I feel like he's a lot more complicated. We don't know much of his backstory. He's a little rebellious and you never quite know what his motivations are. And with Cyrus, it just seems like it's too good, you know, too straightforward. And it just doesn't really, you know, interest me all that much.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. So I'm hoping that once we get more backstory on Cyrus and more about who he is and how he how the genies came to be, that it'll make him more intriguing. Because, I mean, really, all we got were his mushy moments with Alice, and those were kind of like, yeah, great, buddy, move on. I mean, there wasn't enough there to make him interesting yet, I don't think. I mean, clearly...
Yeah, that's pretty much what I thought, too, is he doesn't exactly seem, you know, deep and layered, and, you know, especially like the Knave, who we found out a lot about already. I'm assuming we'll see Cyrus coming up here, we'll get a lot more about him, and, you know, really get to find out what drives him and what he is so all about. So I'm interested to find out more before I decide whether or not I like him or not.
Yeah. I shall hold judgment. What did you guys think about the set of Wonderland? Like the idea of it, like with the marshmallow lake or whatever it was, and how they used the actual dragonflies to toast the marshmallow to escape and like all that stuff.
There are some things that I like and that I think work really well, and other things that just not so much. Like, one thing I think that worked really well was the battle with the cat, and the Knave, like, plucks off a piece of mushroom and pitches it down the cat's throat. I thought that was genius. But some of the grander scale sweeping things, CGI just looks bad. And I know Once Upon a Time always has some dodgy CGI, but some of this looked really not good.
Yeah, I agree, because the thing is, like, this story, Alice in Wonderland, if you guys have read the book, it's a weird story. And so I think that the show is going to kind of follow that and be very weird and kind of crazy, but I don't want it to be over the top. I don't want it to be silly. I'd be much happier if it was a darker, sort of spookier story, because I think, like, the actual story, the heart of the story, has so much potential that I don't want people to get turned off by the fact that, like, the CGI is dodgy or that things just seem kind of silly and stupid, because I do think that the story that they have here that they're going for could be really, really interesting.
Yeah, the CGI was definitely dodgy, especially that end sequence. Woo.
Yeah.
That was rough. But I like the little whimsical parts too, because Alice in Wonderland, while it is a kind of weird story, also is whimsical. So I like that they kept some of the whimsy with the dragonflies that are actual dragons and stuff like that. But I agree about the CGI. If it can't be good, then they shouldn't do it. They should find a way around it. Because the sheer fact that it will pull people out of the story. Like, for Once Upon a Time, I know Laura used to complain about different aspects of the CGI, but I never really noticed them so much. I noticed in this one in a big way, and that was hard because it does pull you out of the story because it looks bad. So hopefully, you know, that was the first episode, and it'll get better as we move forward. That's all we can hope for, I guess.
Did anyone else love getting a quick look at the Mad Hatter's place again?
Yes.
Jefferson.
I was like, oh, we need him back. We need him back so bad. But yeah, that was a nice little throwback to kind of get a glimpse.
I mean, not that I want Sebastian Stan's movie career to tank, but I want Jefferson back. He was so good.
I know. Hopefully they can squeeze him in for an episode. Because, I mean, really, what is Wonderland without the Hatter? It's not as exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, does anyone have anything else for Wonderland? So this concludes our episode for Once Upon a Time and Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. If you guys have any discussion points that you want to bring up or anything like that, please do leave them in the comments on the podcast. We always look at them and we'll be happy to discuss your opinions with you. I'm sure lots of you have feels about Peter Pan and Neil and everything else that happened in these episodes. And let us know what you think of Wonderland, if you liked it, if you didn't like it, and if you like Cyrus or the name better, because you know that's going to be a poll sooner or later. So thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Kristen.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.